Good morning, everyone. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, isn't it? Thank you so much for being here this morning. My name is Denise Lucy. I'm a professor of business and organizational studies and the executive director of the Institute for Leadership Studies. And this program, the Business Edge Breakfast Briefing, is a partnership with the North Bay Leadership Council and Abrowski School of Business, where I teach and reside. I'll be introducing Cynthia Murray, the CEO of the North Bay Leadership Council, in a few minutes, but let's just get to know a few other people first. This is a thrilling, thrilling, beautiful day, isn't it?
Yes, of course.
And I want to thank Corey Colburn for the breakfast. Thank you, Corey, for our breakfast and for organizing everything and for our student team that's out and who greeted you today. The Business Edge Breakfast Briefing, the goal of it is to ignite our thinking of how we can improve our organizations and our businesses. And this is a terrific topic, isn't it, for today? We all can learn about how to better brand our organizations. And we couldn't do this program without the support of Bank of Marin, who's been a tremendous partner for several years. And Bank of Marin is the best bank, and not just in Marin, correct? It's almost worldwide now.
Almost.
And I would like to introduce Andrea Henderson, Bank of Marin's representative, to come forward and just say a few words.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. I hope that you'll get a lot out of today. One of Bank of Marin's core guiding principles is really working with community partners to find ways to have a positive impact. And I feel like the Business Edge Breakfast Briefing is one of those ways to work with both Dominican and the North Bay Leadership Council to bring value add information to make the business community a better place and a thriving economic environment, not only in Marin, but in other areas, or almost internationally, as you said, in the Greater Bay Area. Bank of Marin celebrated our 30th anniversary year earlier this year, and we've built a brand over 30 years and look forward to many years to come, and look forward to being a part of this community as well as the Greater Bay Area. Thank you, and please enjoy the day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andrea. Really appreciate it. We have several other community partners that organizes this program for us, and that is San Rafael Chamber of Commerce, and Leonard Weingarten is here today. Leonard, do you want to stand up and say a few words?
Good morning. San Rafael Chamber of Commerce is an award-winning, women-led, green-certified business advocacy organization open to any business in San Rafael, out of San Rafael. So we can be a resource to help your business, the doors are open to you. We're celebrating 100 years of service to the community this year. So if you haven't been to one of our events, we have a networking event next week on Wednesday. If you'd like to come as my guest, happy to invite you. We can talk about it afterwards. And then on April 2nd, we have our State of the City Dinner. It's one of our signature events of the year. And since it is our 100th anniversary, we're working on something special for it. And so we have information on the table. I'm happy to talk with you yesterday and tomorrow and the year after. And so we can be a resource. Let us know.
Thank you, Leonard. And for those of you on Penguin Radio, which we are live recording now and will podcast, the State of the City Dinner is on April 2nd. And all you have to do is dial Leonard Weingarten. He'll get you a spot. Also, another partner is the America's Small Business Development Center. The SBDC is here right in our business school campus, and we are thrilled to have them as a partner for several years. And Matthew, there you are, Matthew. Matthew Wick, would you like to say a few words?
Hi, my name is Matthew Wick. I'm the program manager for the Small Business Development Center. The core of our business is to help your business, to help small businesses start up and grow. For us, a small business is 150 employees or less, so that's most of what we have here in Marin County. The primary service we offer is that we have a team of 22 business advisors who are specialists in various areas. We have web development specialists, we've got social media marketing, we've got branding, we've got HR people, funding people, product development, just about anything that your business is going to need help with. And all of our one-on-one advising with these specialists is free. The advisors are paid, but they're paid by our organization. It's free to our clients. We also put on workshops. We have about 20 of them coming up this spring. There are flyers over on the table in back. We have a whole bunch of marketing and then some HR and a business basics series that covers everything you need to know in order to start up a new business. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Please spread the word. This is a terrific resource, isn't it? Right in your backyard at Marin's University. Our other partners are the CEO Club of Marin, the Marin Economic Forum, and Stanton Chase. And we really appreciate their partnership as being community involved. So let's get started with our program. I'm going to introduce to you my partner, Cynthia Murray, partner in crime. Cynthia is the president and CEO of the North Bay Leadership Council. She serves on boards of many organizations, including the Bay Area Economic Institute, First Five Sonoma County Commission, Sonoma County Health Action Council, Marin School to Careers Partnership, and the Metropolitan Transportation Commission's Policy Advisory Council. She's received the 2010 Women in Business Award from the North Bay Business Journal for her achievements in economic development. Prior to becoming CEO at North Bay Leadership Council, she served 8 years on the Marin County Board of Supervisors and 7 years on the Novato City Council, including 1 year as mayor. Ms. Murray is a graduate of Rutgers University and spent 20 years in sales and marketing and is an adjunct professor at Sonoma University. Please welcome Cynthia Murray.
Good morning. It's so nice to see you all here. And we have a fantastic topic today presented by amazing speakers. So we are so lucky to have Mission Critical here to talk about personality and brand. And I was laughing to myself on the way over here, remembering the old line when somebody was going to fix you up with a date and they said they have a good personality and it made you a little worried what you were going to be seeing. Well, today we're going to figure out why having a good personality is so important and how you can infuse that into your brand. So get ready. Mission Critical specializes in working with nonprofits, governmental organizations, and businesses that offer complex services and that often have organizational structures with many stakeholders. We have two speakers today. The first is the creative director, and she told me her name 3 times. I'm still probably going to butcher it. Hey Yun. Okay, great. She began her career specifying type waxing repro onto boards and wielding an X-Acto knife in what could be called the Iron Age of graphic design, followed by Macworld Magazine Art Department. She founded Toby Designs in 1995, specializing in publication design, and still nurtures a love of print. I just read a great thing all about how much font is important in design now, so I'm sure you have a lot to share. And our second speaker is a Markham strategist. Her name is Leslie Bellegarry. The Butcher of Names, that's my subtitle. Leslie's marketing career began at Heidelberg, USA for the world's first digital printing press, the GTO-DI, followed by CKS Partners, one of Silicon Valley's first integrated marketing agencies, and recently at the Buck Institute in Novato. In 2014, she launched LB Markham, a marketing communication consultancy. Please welcome our two speakers.
Thank you. I'm going to back up just a second here. So good morning, and thank you for getting up so early today. I'm Hye-Yun Kim, and I'm the creative director, graphic designer, and partner of Mission Critical Creative. And our creative agency specializes in working with organizations whose mission is to improve lives. You know, we love working with our clients so that they can have greater impact in doing the work that they do. And we work together on strengthening their brands in a transformative process. And we're really excited to be spending the next hour with you as we discuss brand personality.
Hello, and I'm Leslie Bellegarry. I'm the Marcom strategist and partner at Mission Critical Creative. As Cynthia said, we're a Bay Area branding and graphic design firm. And we just want to thank our partners and hosts here, Dominican University of California, the North Bay Leadership Council, the Institute for Leadership Studies, Bank of Marin, all the community sponsors. We really appreciate this opportunity, and thank you again for waking up and getting here this morning. We have a lot to talk about. First, let me talk about Hay and I and how we got started together. We met in 2011 at the Buck Institute for Research on Aging. And there we worked on their annual reports and donor communication materials. And we have been working together ever since. We launched Mission Critical Creative together officially in 2017. And as Hay said, we absolutely love working with our clients and working with them to become the best version of themselves. That's really what we enjoy doing. What we do, first off, when we first meet with someone, if we're engaged with them, we start off right away with brand personality attributes. And the reason we do that, you're going to see in our presentation, is that it helps us create content that expresses their brand in the best and most unique way.
Here's an overview of our session today, and we're going to be explaining what brand personality is and why it matters, and then we're going to go over a pretty simple process to help you figure out how to do it yourself. We find that especially for smaller businesses and nonprofits, brand personality is often forgotten. And what we're going to do today is we're going to put it all into context so that you can see how it works as a very essential piece of your brand strategy. We're going to do that by looking at lots of examples. We'll do some exercises together. And our goal today is to be as, you know, interactive and make this workshop as actionable as possible. And we do have, you know, we do need to work within the limits of the format and the time frame we have here today. So if you can hold your questions, there will be a Q&A session at the end of the presentation. And we'll check in with you from time to time to make sure that we're all on the same page. So we've got an activity that you can do at any time, and it's going to give you a chance to stretch your legs. So there's a sticker exercise, and you probably didn't notice, but at the back wall, there are words on these posters. And at your place setting in front of you, you might have noticed that there are these tiny little orange stickers, and you each should have three little stickers. And what we want you to do is, during the presentation, feel free to get up at any time and think about your brand personality attributes and the and choose three words and put your sticker next to the words that you choose that you think describes your brand personality. And for the sake of this exercise today, it can be your own business. If you don't have a business, you could just think of a nonprofit organization that you support, or even your personal brand. And this is an exercise that works equally well for nonprofits or businesses. And feel free to add your own words if none of these work for you here. And we'll take a look at them at the end of the session. We also have a book drawing. And we have two copies of Seth Godin's latest book, This Is Marketing, to give away in a raffle. So if you haven't done so already, please put your business card in the ballot box. You might have seen it. Oh, Corey's got it right there. And we'll have a drawing at the end.
All right, let's talk about what a brand is. We just all need to start on the same page. So we have a really succinct description here. A brand is the sum of perceptions and feelings people have about a company, organization, product, or service. So it's really about your reputation, and in the end, it's what your audience says it is. That's really what your brand is. And just to back up one quick second, you all should notice you do have a worksheet on your table in front of you to help you follow along and keep notes as you like. We developed that to just help engagement here. So thank just you. Taking a look at that, what that means, the sum of perceptions, it's what your audience says it is. Okay, so now let's talk about what isn't a brand, because sometimes that clarifies something better than the definition. So a brand is not a name, it is not a logo, it's not a tagline, it's not a specific color, it's not even your marketing materials or a campaign. It's the sum of all of those impressions that make up a brand. So that is what the audience says it is. It's how they feel about you and their actions toward it. That is a brand in our definition here today.
So okay. We want to show you the context of brand personality. And so we came up with this model that shows how brand gets manifested. In the center, you have your mission, vision, and values. So your mission is why you exist, what you do. Your vision defines a problem that you want to solve. Your values are what you believe, and they describe how you behave in the world, how you conduct yourself. So these make up the core of who you are as a business or an organization. Outside the core is positioning. And positioning is differentiation. And you may be more familiar with it as something called your unique selling proposition. It describes how you're different from everyone else in your arena. This next ring is your brand personality. And it's how you're perceived by the outside world, and that's why it's in the outermost ring. So, what are brand personality attributes? So, you know, all of the things that we described were intangible. And if we say that brand is what other people say you are, you know, brand personality attributes are how you manifest and influence that perception. So they're essentially just the characteristics of your brand. And if you think of your brand as a person, what sorts of traits does it have? Here are some possible traits of an organization. The key here is that when you take these words together, they should describe your brand only and none other. And these are the words that are going to help inform the creation of your communications pieces. So specifically, you know, a designer, copywriters, marketing people, they're gonna look at these words and they're gonna influence how the copy is written, the layout, design, image choices for all of your communications pieces. So they need to reflect your brand personality. And if you're consistent in using these attributes, all your materials will be cohesive, and being clear and consistent are essential to having a strong brand.
Okay, again, we're going to reinforce why they're so essential. So we wanted to check in again with you because Hay and I are really used to a collaborative kind of environment. If you see on your table, there's a card that says, "Let's brand together." That's our tagline, and we really, that is what we're known for. And so this format of talking sort of at you and not getting response is not our most familiar way of doing things. So what we wanted to do today is just what I call with my sons who are at college, I need a little proof of life sometimes, POL. And so we're going to just check in every once in a while and say, how's it going? Any questions? We know we can't take all questions because it'll sort of disrupt the format. But if we see, say, POL, just kind of give me a little this or this, or I don't know what you're talking about, lady. So anyway, I just wanted to say that and make note of that because we really do like working with our clients in that way. So again, why are brand attributes so essential? So it's about understanding your brand and then communicating that brand, okay? When you're able to do that well, you create a more consistent and memorable brand. So let's go back to the how brand is manifested chart here. So you have that personality ring on the outside, and that's where your personality traits are developed. So what we're talking about here really is a business strategy. more than it is a marketing strategy. Because you need those personality traits to drive your identity. But oftentimes we're brought in when your identity is already set. So we're going back and sort of helping you discover what those traits are. But as you can see on this chart here, we've got the identity. And when we know what your identity is and all of those traits that uniquely describe your organization or business, then we can do the marketing communications materials and content and web, you know, develop your website. When you do that, you're distinctive, meaning your customers, your donors, your clients can remember you, right? You aren't in a landscape where you're getting muddled up with everyone else, and that equals a strong brand. So how we doing? POL, POL. Okay, good.
Awesome. Okay. And we have some examples here.
Okay, so this is really quick because I know every single one of you understands what Target and Walmart are. They're two general merchandise retailers that we all know really well, but they operate in exactly the same space. But what makes them unique to each one of us? I'm sure every one of us has a preference for which of these retailers we like to go to, but why? They sell the same product, they're both budget retailers. It all comes back to those brand personality traits that they develop and support. So let's take a look at first, we're going to start with positioning because you remember in the ring, that's the second ring out positioning. Target wants us to expect more and pay less. They want us to have the easiest place to shop. That's their positioning. Walmart, on the other hand, wants us to save money so we can all live better. A little bit different. Okay, so let's take a look at their personality traits and how those come forward. For Target, we're looking at these are their traits that come forward in everything they do. They're affordable, design conscious, they're charming, convenient, and accepting. So let's just take one of those really quickly. Design conscious. Target makes, from a business point of view, a conscious effort to design and working with designers in all fields to bring about new products. And then they promote those and they invite us in to come check them out. They're very specific about that. Whereas Walmart, their brand attributes are low cost, approachable, straightforward, friendly, and caring. And how that comes forward is, if you've ever been in a Walmart, they have greeters. They're very, very consistent about that. And that's just one of the simple ways that you can see a brand personality come to life. All right. Just got to catch up with myself a little bit. Okay. This is really fun, actually. Okay. So the second reason we like personality traits is that it serves to give direction to all those marketing materials that we were talking about. So this is really fun. This is going to drive it home right away. Okay, Cynthia, thanks for the setup on the fonts. So you can see from a design perspective, if we're given a project and we don't know the direction you're going in, we can choose from literally millions of different typefaces. But in this case, you can see You'll Always Be Mine, the top, was probably something romantic, loving, some sort of maybe Valentine's kind of promotion. And the second one, it's kind of painted, little creepy, little sinister, horror movie, thriller. So it makes a lot of difference to your creative professionals what direction you're going to go into. And those words drive that. So this was just a simple way to explain that. All right. Okay, now, we're going to do another little case study, but I want to encourage everyone. You seem like really riveted, which is so awesome. But I need you to get up a little bit and go put those stickers up. Just maybe a couple of you, from one from each table. Start picking out your brand attributes so we can talk about those in the end. I promise you won't miss anything. No, they are different.
And they're in alphabetical order as
they're
well.
They're in alphabetical order. And so you can listen. We can all multitask, so it's good. All right. This is a case study that I love to do because it's local. We all know Bay Alarm. They are a local home security and professional business company. They have a myriad of competitors. I mean, just look at this. This is just some random list of home security and security companies. They have national competitors, they have local competitors, and now they even have do-it-yourself competitors. If you walk into any Costco, right, you see all the rings, you know, install those, it's all gonna be great. So how have they managed in this environment to become the US's largest independently owned home security company? How did they do that? It's really by becoming more memorable and distinctive. And they use brand personality to drive those decisions and how they communicate to us. And so I'm going to show you a few photos. Oh, first I got to tell you what the brand attributes are. So I did some research, and these are the brand attributes that I'm assigning to them. And you'll see that come forward. So I believe they are focused because they only do home security. They don't do anything else. They don't do, you know, they don't do web service. They do home security. They're local. They're here on the West Coast. They're professional in how they speak to us. We can feel secure in the way that they communicate. They're very direct. You're going to see that. And a surprising one, which makes them unique, is they're droll. They're a little bit funny for a security company. Wait till you see this. You're going to remember. Okay, so here's a screenshot of their homepage, and you immediately know they're local, right? You see the Golden Gate Bridge, we all know. Oh, we're in the Bay Area, everything's cool. Okay, so first up, look at that text. You and this army. Okay, so it's you, and you've got an army of people behind you keeping your home safe. It's direct, it's clean, it's red. It's telling you that it's professional. Here's a little bit of droll. Headed to work, so are the burglars. So the humor starts to come forward. Now we're starting to remember who they are. Now the last one's my favorite. Burglar, schmurgler. You got nothing to worry about. You know, we're here with you. So that's how Bay Alarm expresses their brand personality. So now we've got another exercise for you. We're gonna keep you all busy. You can see how we work with our clients. We keep you all busy. So now we're going to let you take a stab at practicing picking out brand attributes. And so I'm going to show you what we're going to do first with another little mini case study. And then on your worksheet, if you flip it over, we're going to select those together. So let me show you how first. So we're going to talk about the World Wildlife Fund. Global environmental nonprofit organization. You can take a look at their homepage there. Their headline reads, "Underwater Noise, Why It Matters That the Arctic is Getting Louder." Their cute panda, everyone knows their cute panda. And I want to read to you a little bit from their website so that you can understand. When you're analyzing something, you have to look at more of a screenshot, but we're kind of cheating today. So their website says, "The mission of the World Wildlife Fund is to conserve nature and reduce the most pressing threats to the diversity of life on Earth." Okay, so if you take a little bit of that knowledge, take a look at how they designed their website, that cute panda, what might be their brand attributes? So I'm going to show you what Hay and I picked. We picked direct, friendly, modern, plain spoken, and hopeful. And just a quick analysis is, if you take a look at the photos, it's not showing, you know, animals in distress. It's a clean design. It's very modern. So there's a little hope going on there because they're showing you blue ocean with a healthy whale. That's what they're doing. So next up, what you need to do is test those attributes against something else to see if you're actually being unique. So this is another environmental organization that we're not revealing yet. So if you take a look at what they have, recycling is not working. We must break free from plastic. And you look at their very serious imagery, right? Who is this? Would the brand attributes we selected for World Wildlife Fund fit with this organization? Probably not. So who is this? This is Greenpeace. So they have a whole nother set of attributes that they use to create their materials. And so for them, we selected grassroots, action-oriented, integrity, empowered, and urgent. So as creative professionals, if we're working with Greenpeace and we know these are their words, when we're doing an image search or setting up a photography session or working with a copywriter, and Hayes trying to lay out the design, all of these words really impact how something's going to look and how we're going to communicate that to the end customer or donor to create that impression of brand. Okay, guess what? It's your turn. Okay, so everyone take their worksheet, get to the right spot, and look for Habitat for Humanity. Okay, so we're just going to do a quick test here. Not a test. This is not a test. This is practice. There's no test. So Habitat for Humanity, everyone knows them pretty well. Let me just give you a few little points about them. Sorry, I got to get to the right place here. Okay, so we know them well for building homes. They are in the top 15 charities in the U.S., and they took in over, believe it or not, $1.6 billion in 2016. Okay, they're a large organization. They focus, you can see right here, we build strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. So their branding, when you take a look at that, in our little analysis, is that they're really moving away from just building homes. They're starting to talk about what building a home, what having a home actually means, what it means to someone and a family. So if you take a look at that, and let me just repeat their mission, it is seeking to put God's love into action. Habitat for Humanity brings people together to build homes, communities, and hope. Okay, so you got a little snapshot. I know that's really quick, but we want you to take a stab at picking three brand attributes for Habitat for Humanity. We've thrown some words up here. This is just a partial list to get your creativity sparking. If you worked on Habitat for Humanity, maybe you pull that in. You can use any three words that you think are appropriate. So take about 30 seconds and do that. And if you've already done it, go put your stickers on the board.
Okay,
the words went away. Okay, do you need the words back?
Well, we need to move on.
Okay, all right. So, I know that was very quick, but we've got a lot to tell you today. So, we're moving on. All right, so who can share some brand attributes that you believe? There's no wrong answer, okay? There might be a couple, but I'm not going to say that you're wrong. Okay, yes.
Community.
Okay, good. Anyone else, please? Yes.
Hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Daring.
Caring. Caring. Right. Okay. Anyone else want to share? It's okay.
Go ahead.
Industrious. Ooh. Excellent. Okay. So here's the words that Hay and I assigned to them. Resourceful, down to earth, hardworking, joyful, and diverse. Okay. So when you take those, all that set of words together, that's what describes Habitat for Humanity. If you take the words out singularly, it maybe doesn't work as well. Can I say a word about caring to the gentleman? Caring. Okay, so I'm going to use you as an example, okay? Yeah, you can take it. Okay, caring in a nonprofit setting applies to every single organization on the globe. So that's what you want to think about not using. because it doesn't distinguish you from anyone else in that arena. If you're in the nonprofit world, you better be caring about something. That's your whole reason for existing. So that's just a good example of how, if that's your word and you really got to have that word, you have to think of something else that distinguishes you a little bit better. Okay, so let's go to Whole Foods, national retailer. Probably every single one of you has been in a Whole Foods, stepped into Whole Foods before. All right. I'm going to read a little bit. So take a look at the images on your worksheet. You've got a picture of inside the store. You've got some signage. And their purpose is to nourish people and the planet. We're a purpose-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. Quality is a state of mind at Whole Foods Market. Okay, so hearing that, seeing the images on your worksheet, and taking your personal experience from going into Whole Foods, pick three words to describe Whole Foods, their personality. What is the Whole Foods personality traits? All right, how we doing? Okay, who can share their words? Anyone? Come on, we can do this.
No one's gonna say whole patient.
Organic, organic. Go get, what? Earthy, okay, good. Come on. Sorry?
Righteous.
Righteous.
You didn't have it up there, but healthy.
Healthy.
Okay.
Another one?
Quality.
Quality, okay. So here are the words that we selected based on our research. Healthy, premium, environmentally conscious, clean, and nourishing. So again, we would take these words and we would test them against any other premium grocery outlet to determine if this somehow makes Whole Foods more memorable and distinct. So now I'm going to turn it back over to Hay.
Good point.
Nope. Clean living. So Hay's going to tell you about how to use do-it-yourself with the personality attributes.
Okay, just one last reminder about the sticker exercise, and then we'll move on. So we've talked about the why, and now it's time to get to the how. So to recap, if your company's materials look like they could be from another business in your same arena, you know, you've got a problem. And brand personality attributes are going to fix that and help you make you more distinctive. So we have a very simple process that is going to help you determine your brand personality attributes. The first step is simply generating a list. And we have some suggestions for how to go about doing that. One good way to begin is an in-person brainstorming session, because it works great if you can get people in the same room and block out about an hour and just have people get inspired and bounce ideas out and capture them on a whiteboard or a poster. Make sure to include a diverse group of people, so not just your marketing team. You know, get some people from administration, maybe some people from sales, practitioners, board members, maybe donors. And make sure to also lay out some ground rules about, you know, this is brainstorming where you're generating ideas and not editing. We'll get to the editing part. And also make sure that quieter people have an opportunity to provide input. This photo shows another way to work with words on Post-it notes, and that can be really handy because you can just rearrange them. We also suggest doing two different kinds of audits here at this stage. And one is auditing your own marketing and communications materials. So you want to get your hands on everything that you put out, including printing out pages from your website, along with your printed materials like your brochure and newsletter or direct mail pieces. And you want to just lay it out and take it all in and think about, you know, what overall qualities do your materials say about you? Is it clear what your company or your organization is about? is there consistency in how you portray yourself? And this photo is materials from a membership association. And I just want to point out that it doesn't really look like they all come from one organization, right? The other audit that is really fun to do, and our clients actually really enjoy doing, is an audit of your competitors. So in business, you know you have competition, and maybe as a nonprofit organization, you know, you think you don't have competition. But the fact is, you're always competing for attention and resources. So there are competition in your field. For the sake of this exercise, we picked this organization called the Marine Science Institute, and they're an educational environmental nonprofit, and they take kids from schools on field trips on a research boat onto the bay, and they teach them about the biology of the bay. And we looked up some other environmentally focused organizations who also focus on the San Francisco Bay. So here's a chart that we created just for this case study. And like we were showing you just before, what you want to do is think about the overall impression you're getting. What are the brand personality attributes of each of these organizations? And then you, as the Marine Science Institute, you know, what can you do to be more distinctive within this field? The next part is culling the words. You want to have a manageable set, right? And we suggest not having more than five. And it'd be great if you can get consensus, but you'll likely need to put it to a vote. And we have a suggestion for how to do that. So voting in person can work in this manner, where we just put up words kind of like we did here, but these are, you know, an edited list. And we love stickers, as you can see. And we call this dot voting. And what you do is you give everyone in the room the same number of dots. They use them however they see fit in order to vote for the words that they think best apply to their brand personality. Then the top words go on to the next voting session. If you have a distributed team, or there are people who work virtually, you can also conduct a survey online. You can use SurveyMonkey or Google Docs to do that. And here the images are showing you some examples of dot votings that we did with two clients. And this final photo, I don't know if you'd recognize it, but these blue Post-its from earlier, the little stickers are actual votes now, and these are the final contenders. So Leslie's going to talk to you about vetting the words.
Okay, so it's really important when you're selecting the words that you include not only your internal people, but external people. So your people that you, or businesses you do partnerships with, supporters, stakeholders, it's really important you get that outside viewpoint of those words. Because you want the words to be authentic, realistic, and unique. Right? It's okay to be somewhat aspirational, but it has to be accurate. That's really important. So again, we've gone over this point a few times. Taken all together, are those words distinctive? If you cover up the company and you look at those words, does any other company or organization come to mind? If they do, you might want to go back and rejigger your words. The other important part is everyone on board in your organization. Did you leave someone out who could sabotage? And we're going to talk about pitfalls, because, you know, ask us how we know. Okay, so again, you want to include outside stakeholders. Be creative about who you include, because diverse opinions do help, but not too many people. You know, you want to keep that team tight, because
if you have 20 people, you're going to have, you know, 21 different opinions in that room. So you want to make sure that it's, you're able to reach some sort of meaningful consensus and not dilute the process too much. Again, don't leave anyone out who could sabotage, because you know who that is in your organization. If you, you know, if you're working with a VP or if you're on a committee and oops, we forgot to tell the president, and the president has veto power, that's going to sabotage your process. So make sure that's obvious. But also, there's always those individuals in your organization that can help you. They're good evangelists, and it's good to get their buy-in. So do that. Please don't select conflicting words coming from a creative team. If you select words like traditional and innovative, those two words are really hard to make work when we're trying to create something for you, because they're in conflict with one another. So keep that in mind. And then just right off the bat, take these words off your list: ethical, authentic, teamwork, fun, and compassionate. Take all of those off your words. This is kind of the same idea about caring. Every single organization and business in the world should be ethical and accurate, authentic, right? It's hard to be, but if you use those words, you're not going to be distinctive enough. All right? And then also, please don't select more than five. That number five is just about the number that we can all remember, and your team and everyone in your company or organization can remember, because these words are going to be used as a barometer for creating materials and content and blogs and everything that you do. So you want to make sure that it's just enough. All right.
So, now that you have your personality attributes, you know, what do you do with them? So first of all, you want to include them when you write a creative brief or a work order, maybe, you know, for your creative team. You want the words to be considered along with whatever the primary message is for your piece. And, you know, that could be anything. And what we're talking about is content creation. What's the purpose and vehicle for the message for this particular audience? So it's a print brochure for something, or it's a web page about a new service, or maybe it's a Facebook ad promoting something. So think back and imagine a public awareness campaign about plastic pollution in the ocean. How might the World Wildlife Fund do it? And how might Greenpeace do it? Can you imagine in your mind that they would have very different approaches, because their brand personalities are very distinctive from each other? Art direction and photo editing is when an art director commissions photography, or even just searching for a stock photo. You know, you need direction, because if your attribute is something like frugal, you know, you're not going to select the same sorts of pictures that a brand that is opulent would choose, right? And copy tone, that is your voice. So the actual language, vocabulary that you use. Is it casual? Is it formal? If you remember back to the Bay Alarm example, you know, they use a lot of humor in their copy and in their advertising, but it may be the case that humor is not appropriate for another type of brand. And design, finally, design puts everything together in a way that creates an overall look and feel, you know, apart from the actual words on the page. So that's also a very important component here. I'm going to demonstrate using one of our clients how we used their brand personality attributes that we helped develop with them, and we used it to entirely rebrand and rename their company. And the project was very complex, because we were working with principals from three separate employee benefits agencies who merged their companies into one entity. And although they initially hired us because, you know, we need a logo, you know, which is a lot of what, you know, people think of brand, it quickly became clear that we needed to also start with a new name, and you'll see why in the next slide. So when we began, their name was the SSM Group. You know, it was just a working title, and it was made up from the initials of the three merging agencies. Their marketing materials that they had included this trifold and this business card design, but you know, their logo and brochure are like really generic. Wouldn't you agree? These materials were clearly made by professionals, but they lack any distinction. We helped them through this very process to determine their brand personality attributes, and some of those photos that you saw earlier were from exercises with them. The words they chose were creative, strategic, community-oriented, experts, and approachable. Now, would you say any of those qualities were coming through their current materials? So we used those brand personality attributes to rename them, give them a new logo, and create an entire identity for them. So every aspect of their new identity, including their tagline, was created with the brand personality attributes in mind. And I'm just going to get like really specific here, even though we don't really design in this manner. But the name itself, out of all of the possibilities, they loved Arrow because it implied, you know, being on target. So it's strategic. The arrowheads coming together, they liked it because it meant community-oriented to them. The colors, they thought, showed creativity. And the tagline, complex questions, straight answers, reflected that they're experts, but they're really, you know, kind of straightforward and very approachable. This piece is their general purpose brochure that had a pocket in the back with these color-coded data sheets that covered each of their services. So not only do the brand personality attributes give direction at the beginning of a project, they also help to evaluate proposed design along the way. So at every step, we ask ourselves, okay, does this piece say strategic, creative, community-oriented, experts, approachable? The new identity was used in the creation of all new materials for them, including their stationery, you know, banners, website, and they loved it. They loved it. It was a huge, huge success. So next, Leslie's going to analyze one of her favorite brands.
Okay, how we doing? Everyone good?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, excellent. All right, so we have given you so much to think about, right, in the little, like, 55 minutes that we have with you today. So we wanted to bring it all home with a brand that just exudes personality, and probably every single one of you, I'm imagining, has been in a Trader Joe's. Is that true? Okay, so this is great because there's a lot of photos, and it really does demonstrate, a brand personality. So just a little bit of quick background here. Trader Joe's they have about 500 stores nationwide. They have about 10,000 employees, and believe it or not, they did $13 billion in business. They were founded in 1967 by a gentleman by the name of Joe Colum, who sadly just passed away last week at the age of 89. He selected the name Trader Joe's to evoke feelings of being in the South Pacific. And they still use nautical terms throughout their business today. And I'm seeing some shaking heads. So you're gonna all, when you see the photos, you'll understand why this is true. So these are their brand attributes, their traits: quirky, charming, exotic, affordable, and socially responsible. So now we're gonna demonstrate how that comes forward through their branding efforts. However, they do actually very little marketing. So it's kind of interesting how well they have a brand personality. So first off, let's talk about, they call all of their employees crew members. And anyone in the leadership is called a first mate, a captain, or a commander. So again, this is, goes back to that business strategy. This is about deciding how your business is going to run based on some personality traits. Next up, you all know they wear the tropical shirts. That's intentional to make their customers feel at ease, obviously. They also do the ringing bell. They don't use an intercom to call for help. If you've shopped at Trader Joe's, that's probably happened. And what I like to point out is you can see that they use chalkboards and chalkboard art all through the store. And that is intentional to bring about feelings of being in your favorite restaurant in a cafe. So all, you know, some of these you can right away see, it's kind of quirky, the nautical theme. It's a little bit charming and exotic. You're in the South Pacific. So you can kind of see how they start to, those brand personality traits start to come about. Next up, let's talk about their marketing. Probably everyone's received a Fearless flyer. It's really some of the only outside marketing they do. In it, they use copy in a really relaxed tone to highlight their most exotic products to inspire us to go try those in the store. They, about 80% of their products are private label, and they use quirky and offbeat phrases to entertain us. So this is a Kleenex box. I'm there when you're sad, love tissue. It's just fun, right? So again, that goes back to the quirky and charming. All right, so while they're not known and they don't claim cheap, they have a lot of basic products that fall in the affordable category, and this is the one you all know next, Two-Buck Chuck. That put them on the map in a lot of people's minds. Let's talk about their food choices. They are often on the, they often set food trends. They are known for, they spend the most on R&D in terms of travel, traveling the world looking for new products. So here's some examples of just things that they offer us as their customers, and they also cater to a wide variety of diet preferences, from gluten-free to vegan to keto. So they, you know, I don't know if that falls in the exotic category, but what they're also known for is being socially responsible. They are known for paying their employees well, providing to the 401k plans, and they were one of the first retailers nationwide to offer non-GMO products in addition to being fair trade. This is actually my favorite coffee, if anyone wanted to know that. So anyway, that kind of, that impression of those pictures, that is their brand personality that comes right straight through. And it's really important that they have those, otherwise they would just be like any other brand. But instead, they're this beloved grocery retailer.
Okay, so we've talked about what brand is and the what and the why of brand personality. And we've given you some examples. You got some practice at choosing brand personality attributes. And now you know what to do with them. So let's take a look at the words that people have chosen. And Leslie's back there, and she's going to read out some of these just for fun.
All right, really quickly, we have adventurous, ambitious, artistic. We have three for businesslike.
Businesslike, okay.
We have dynamic, excellent, excitable.
Oh, excitable. I wonder what kind of business
what
that would
be. What kind of business
is
that? Fair, encouraging, two for fearless.
Oh, fearless. That's good.
Okay. We've got friendly, fun. We've got two for fun. Futuristic, generous.
Huh, okay.
Good. We have two for innovative. Humorous, impressive, inspiring, instinctive. Oh boy, we have five dots on credible.
Credible, okay. I'm just trying to imagine what sort of business or brand you would be in order to have that as a distinction. You, oh, okay.
Okay,
all
okay.
Right.
We've got diligent, conservative, confident, three for collaborative.
Oh, okay.
One for dashing. Who's
oh,
dashing?
Oh, I love dashing.
That is
you know,
excellent.
That's so evocative. I mean, I'm not, you know, if you were a clothing manufacturer or menswear shop,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's excellent.
Would that be okay. distinctive?
Kind, two for knowledgeable. Powerful, two for professional.
Okay.
Reliable, two for responsible, one for revolutionary.
I love that.
Who is making transformations here? Righteous. Who's righteous? Okay, we have sensitive, skillful, talented, traditional one, and we have four for trustworthy.
Oh, that's good. Okay, but if you're like a CPA, please don't be trustworthy. I mean, we rely on you to be trustworthy. Just don't pick that word because, you
doesn't
know,
make
you there's a baseline here that is assumed.
Yeah. Unconventional, unique, vigorous.
Oh, I like that too.
That's excellent. Yeah. We have sustainable, strategic, and durable.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You guys did a really good job. There's a lot of dots with just a lot of words with just one dot. And that's really important because, see, then you're the only one.
So, Corey, okay, we're going to do we're going to do the book raffle. Okay. And then we have a little offer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone
else?
Put
your business card in because we have two really great books to give away.
Yeah. We have two copies of Seth Godin's book. And, you know, he's a longtime marketing guru. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anyone else?
I'll just read. All right. Awesome. Okay. All right. Mary Beth Culler. Yay! Thank you, Mary Beth. Enjoy. Okay, and we have a second copy, so. Darcy Quinn. Yay! Okay, so we taught you a process for doing this yourself, but you may want to work with professionals like us. You know, we really believe, Leslie and I truly believe, that our clients know their brand best, but what they lack is objectivity about it. And our clients tell us over and over that the greatest value that we bring is, you know, leading them, facilitating the process, and bringing our expertise as well as our objectivity to help them along. You know, it's common for you to be just too close to your brand to really to be able to see it very well. You know, we all make assumptions about what people know about us and our businesses or what they don't know. Also, brands can get cluttered over time as you add services and new products. And so Leslie and I work to help bring clarity. There are also external factors like changes in the market or competition or even changes in technology that sometimes demands that, you know, you take another look at your brand and see if you're still moving along where you want to be. So what we did today is really one small aspect of developing your brand, and we have a free workbook on our website that goes into the other steps if you want to explore that. And while this workbook was written specifically with nonprofit groups in mind, about 95% of it still applies to all businesses. You know, the only part you might ignore is the part about donors and donor communications. So Leslie and I wrote an entire series of blog posts describing every step of this process. So it'll give you a lot more information and see if this is something that you want to take on for yourself.
All right. We want to, again, thank you so much for getting up today, being, you know, willing participants in all of the exercises we had today. And before I describe this offer, which is right up here, you can read for yourself, as a favor to us, you can see on your table there are two cards that say, stay calm, let's brand together. What we would really appreciate is if you had any comments for us, or more specifically, if there's a topic about branding that you would like to see another presentation around, we would love to know that as well. So please feel free to write in those cards. But we love our jobs. We love working with clients and learning about their businesses. And as a thank you to you today, what we're offering to all of the participants is a free hour consultation on the phone. You can schedule it yourself. You just go to our website, missioncriticalcreative.com/BEBB, and you can sign up for an hour's worth of free consultation with both Hay and on the phone. The only thing that we ask is that you do that by April 1st. So thank you so much
for
being here and listening and being a part of this workshop.
So now we have time for a few questions.
Yes. Really great information. I'm just wondering, how is it that you know that your brand is working? Like, what are the how do you evaluate? Is it, what metrics do you use to know whether or not what you've decided your brand is based on what the perceptions, you know, external to your organization are? How do you know it's working?
Okay. It depends on your measures, right? Whatever your metrics are. If you're talking about business goals, specific business goals, right, in terms of growth, or if you're a nonprofit, in terms of the donations that you receive. So all of those things rely on the materials that you put out. And if something's not working, you know, you want to get behind that and try to figure out what it is and tweak it. So I think Leslie has some.
I think the easiest way to tell is to do some research and informal research with your customer base. It doesn't have to be fancy. It really doesn't. You don't have to hire a firm to do focus groups for you. It is illuminating to simply spend, you know, 2 or 3 20-minute sessions on the phone with willing customers and have. We've done this for our clients before where we set up a group of questions all the same and spend time on the phone talking to customers and donors and asking them this series of questions and then documenting it. And it's kind of like the competitive chart. It's illuminating to see what is working because they're going to tell you. And again, as Hay said, it's also a business decision, right? If there's a program or service that is not being successful, deciding is it a brand issue? Is it a communication issue? Or is it an offerings issue? But one of the first things we would recommend absolutely is finding a way to do some research and getting input from the people you're trying to reach.
Wouldn't you also recommend that as part of your branding process, you define what success would look like?
Absolutely.
And that would be part of what your success, and you'd have some metrics around that. So you're going into it with an idea of what you hope to achieve.
Exactly.
And you can measure against that.
Exactly. And it's so specific to each organization and business, what you consider successful, what your goals are.
Questions? Yes, Chris.
Yeah, I was wondering about reconciling your external stakeholders' perceptions, what we were just talking about through surveys or focus groups, and your internal leadership goals around brand, right? So the outside may be saying, oh, you're droll and you're serious and responsible. And senior leadership or your marketing and branding team have a different perception, or they have different goals. There's this sort of disconnect. So
I'm going to go back to the beginning. I'm going to go back to the very beginning. Your brand is what your audience says it is. It's really that.
So how do you reconcile?
So that takes internal work, right? That it takes research and reflecting back to those who, you know, demonstrating that you are not what you think you are. That folks have a different viewpoint of you and you are putting out an image or traits in some way. It might not be branding oriented, it might not be a marketing solution. It might be a business solution that's needed. But that's a tough That's a normal thing that occurs, but it's why it's so important to be in touch with your audience and your customers and your donors and know what they're thinking. And social media, by the way, is the easiest way to understand. If you put anything out on Twitter or Instagram and you have comments coming back to you, they will absolutely tell you. And making a tweet and asking people what they think, it takes 10 minutes. You know, I mean, you can get sort of an idea very quickly about what people think, but going back and reconciling that is an organization by organization solution. You know, it's probably about collecting data and both anecdotally and hard data to present to them.
Next question.
Yes, Richard. She's right behind you.
Great presentation, by the way.
Thank you.
My question is, once you've developed an idea of your brand and you start implementing it, colors, fonts, emotional triggers, I think is a major part of it. What about personal branding after the fact? I like to go out during business hours, wear my name tag, and so to create a kind of a personal brand, people should know who I identify with. One of the best people I've seen do this is Leonard over here. When I see Leonard, I see a chamber. I see the chamber. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important too.
Personality definitely drives, individual personalities definitely influence branding. But I want to also say this kind of as a juxtaposition to that, is to the solo entrepreneurs and those out there that have very strong organizations with very strong leaders who have super strong personalities. Your brand needs to have its own separate, distinct brand personality traits. It really, they can cross over, but you're going to get into a little bit of an issue because any organization or business needs to outlast that individual. I know that's not exactly your question, but it sparked a thought about that particular thing. And The organizations that run into that the most are nonprofits. They'll come up with a very strong, dynamic leader who's always out on the forefront, and the brand sort of morphs into that person. And then when that person leaves, what do? You're left with rediscovering who your brand is. But personal branding is a different, it's a Venn diagram. It overlaps definitely. But those of you interested in personal branding, one of the ways to think about it is taking brand personality traits and breaking them down into different categories, saying in business, so that you are constantly reinforcing your brand personality traits when you're out in the work arena. We are not personal branding experts, but one way to think about it is, you know, am I energetic? Am I knowledgeable? Am I personable? And then taking words and putting them underneath each of those categories to make you more distinctive. You know, to think about being, you are who you are. You're not going to make yourself different based on, yeah, right.
Other questions, Denise?
I just wanted to mention, Richard, you made me think of something. It's really, you're talking about the touch points of the firm's brand are the people, is what I'm hearing you say. And that's a very powerful thing to remember. So we want to make sure that our colleagues, our associates, represent the brand in their personage. Yeah.
Other questions? All right, I have one. So I just read this great article, as I said in the beginning, about design, and it was all about how millennials, they love sans-serif font. You know, if you put it in sans-serif, you're going to get a millennial's attention. And they love pink. And it was like this whole thing, and it made me think about, how often do you need to like refresh your brand or make sure that you're getting the next generation's attention with your brand and maybe they respond to different things than what your current brand is? So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I'll talk just a little bit about it in terms of brand personas. So part of the branding process includes thinking about who your customers or clients are or your donors are, right? And what we have our clients do is we help them create personas. And you might have heard of this, and we create a very specific profile of the types of customers that we want or have. So gender, age, you know, do they live in the city? Do they live in the suburbs? What kind of car do they drive? How many kids do they have? So if you are in a market that is catering to a millennial audience, you certainly need to look at that. So that's how we would approach it, from the aspect of what sort of persona is this person? What do they prefer?
In terms of rebrand, we get that question a lot. And it's often, you maybe rebrand is a strong word. Sometimes you just need a brand refresh. We do a lot of that, where you need some tightening, you need some cohesion, you need some more clarity to help you because you've added services, you've taken off services. Now maybe your tagline doesn't exactly fit, so you need help rejiggering that. I would say rebranding is not really subjective. It should be a business decision in terms of, you know, we've changed our offerings, we've changed location, and we're going for a new market. So we're going to refresh. Rebrand. But refresh is a pretty normal thing to do if you feel like, you know, we're looking a little dated, I'd like to update a little bit. That's pretty normal occurrence. And I would say you don't want to do it more than, you know, some organizations, they're doing it all the time. And it's confusing to the end user, right? Because they just got used to you and now you're redoing it again. So, there, you know, there's a fine balance. And again, I think business decisions drive most of that.
You just made me think of another question. So they say you need 25 impressions to remember something, like in terms of a brand. With all the different ways that we're getting bombarded with information, is that still true, 25, or is it more or less
more
now?
I don't have that answer.
I don't either. No, I don't just know that answer, but
it's just amazing how much information is coming at us from different directions.
You know, again, that goes back, though, to Hay's point about brand personas, is really narrowly targeting your audience. It's about who your target is and not going for everyone in the room. You're really going for the smallest, as you will see in Seth Godin's book, the smallest viable market. So do you want to really target that those people and find where they hang out, and those people are what they call your tribe, you know? And that's what you need to worry about versus everyone in the room having 100 impressions.
I saw a question over here. Oh, Denise.
It just reminds me about the saturation point, too. Is anybody tired of political ads? Sometimes I'm annoyed with too much saturation, right? So I'm wondering, is too much too much? How does one measure or modulate that?
Again, that's driven, I think, you know, unlimited budget. You know, if we had unlimited budget and we had... Hardly anyone has that problem, right?
Bloomberg does.
Yeah, Bloomberg is the one that has that problem.
He withdrew this morning.
So anyway, so I get, you know, it is true, but, you know, that's a good problem to have. You're doing so well that, you know, we won't do the second Super Bowl ad, you know?
Yes, please.
Yeah, also, doesn't it make a real big difference about the kind of channels that you choose, like, say, B2C or B2B would be very different channels that you would need to use to have credibility or reach. Say, instance, you know, getting phone messages or text messages, that might work for B2C, but for B2B, it's kind of like...
For the benefit of our students, would you say what those letters mean?
Oh, okay. B2B is... Stand up. B2B is business, business to business, and you can't get too quirky. It depends. B2C is business to consumer. So if we look at some of our examples out there, you know, Trader Joe's would, Whole Foods definitely be B2C. Some of the others, maybe some of the Bay Alarm could be B2B and B2C. So it's a different approach and different media channels you need to think, and whether you're doing inbound marketing and outbound and how that meshes as well.
You're really talking about an overall brand strategy.
Right.
Right? So the brand personality traits, you know, just to bring that back, is, you know, that's one, when you remember the graphic of the, you know, it funnels down and the brand personality traits is at the outside ring. You know, you're really, that all of that makes total sense in a total, in a big brand strategy, and that would be probably a 3-day workshop.
a new inspiration for
you. Yeah, right. But, you know, that's why today we really tried to focus on one actionable, you know, coherent idea that you could take back and immediately put into action, you know, make happen and understand. But there, obviously, there's so much more to branding than, you know, what 50 minutes can do. But you're absolutely right. Channel marketing really does make a difference. I'm sure Bay Alarm is marketing completely differently to their B2B customers.
Right. And our Aero Benefits Group, you know, they are an employee benefits group. So they're working with employers, small employers in the North Bay.
Yeah. And that's a B2B.
That's a B2B.
They're B2B, right.
Yeah. Other questions? All right, I got another one. So you see a lot about reputation management and when a brand has a problem and they need to reestablish credibility or fix it, there needs to be some way. Do you have strategies around that when your brand has gone bad? Like you've got a bad personality and you need some intervention here because something's gone and you don't want the brand to have a bad reputation.
Okay, this is a good place to go back to. That is an excellent question, Cynthia. Of course, you have excellent questions. So in terms of what Hay and I do, we are a branding and marketing firm, and we specialize in the marketing communications efforts, right? We have lots of different kinds of creative partnerships that we work with, and I would say if you're having a bad time of it, somebody did something they weren't supposed to do, and you need some recovery, there are PR agencies out there that specialize in exactly that. Yeah, it's all right, exactly. It's all damage control. You know, at that point, somebody would probably come to us and say, we want a whole new brand and we want to base it on this new personality that we're putting forward. We wouldn't manage that process. You know, somebody else would manage that process.
One last question, if anyone has it. Yes, Joe. Wait for a mic, please. She's there.
Yes, social media. Seems like everybody's using it to market, and is there one that's more important than the others, or what's the strategy on social media?
I don't have a whole lot to say about it, but I think it depends on where your audience is. And I know that, you know, Facebook is for a slightly older audience, you know, people our age, but the younger people are not on Facebook. If it's something that's very image conscious, you know, that tends to work very well on Instagram. And I'm not on Twitter at all, so Leslie can probably talk about Twitter.
So I think what I would say, we're not the social media experts either. I mean, they're experts for everything, and you got to kind of pick your lane. We do work in social media in terms of guiding the images that are there, but in terms of driving the social media strategy, that is not our bailiwick. There's some other really great professionals out there that do that on a daily basis, but the context for this is that what you really want to start with is Carrie Rigo, who you've had speak here many times. She's a social media expert. She taught me this, which I love. So think of your social media and your online presence as a house. The bottom floor and the foundation is the website. So if your website isn't fully invigorated, have all of the information there, have your blog posts up, if it's not representing you, you don't really have a good house to build upon. So you have to start with your website, making sure that looks good. And then every other social media channel that you can think of really represents a house, a room in a house. So LinkedIn is the professional. When, for example, when Hay and I were promoting this specific workshop on our own social media channels, we were primarily focusing on LinkedIn because we were reaching out to all of our business associates. We were also posting on Instagram, but really we knew that wasn't going to be driving anyone to attend from Instagram, more than likely. It was more about brand awareness for us. But if I had one piece of advice, is make sure that your website is solid, it looks the way, it functions well, it's adapted to mobile, and you're blogging. Then pick one social media channel that really works for you, learn it and master it, and then move on. That's the best advice I have, because it is impossible to keep up with all of it. Every single channel has a different audience and different purpose. And learning that, the only way to really understand it is to learn it or talk to your son or daughter, because they know.
Let's give a big round of applause to Leslie and Hay.
Thank you so much.
And now I'd love to bring back my partner in crime, as she so delicately put it, Denise Lucy.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Wonderful.
You're very good teachers. I'm really, really happy to have been here today. And we have student colleagues in the room. What do you think? You good? I think we could apply some of your principles to personal branding. You say that you're not experts in it, but many of these ideas really do relate to that, don't they? The Business Edge Breakfast Briefing seeks to ignite innovation, strategic initiatives, and business transformation, and I think you did that today. Thank you so very much. We have some things to announce today for you. We, meaning the Institute for Leadership Studies here at the Pulaski School of Business, Bank of Marin is, thank you again, Bank of Marin, for bringing us our next Business Edge Breakfast Briefing. It's April 22nd at the Santa Rosa Junior College Petaluma campus. Each spring, we host a program with the U.S. Department of Commerce. The U.S. Department of Commerce is here also in our business school, and they seek to help businesses export and also bring manufacturing home. Those are the two goals. And this program is on the 22nd of April, and you all know how to register since you were here today. Also, our leadership lecture series in partnership with Book Passage. How many of you have attended this program? Most of you. So I'm so happy you could make it. Our next program, which is coming up with Glennon Doyle next week, is a sold-out program. So we have 840 guests coming. We're very excited. The next program is with Heidi Kuhn, one of our local amazing leaders who's done transformational change in the world, May 11th. We hope that you will join us for that, and you can buy your tickets online with bookpassage.com. And thank you, Bank of Marin, for also being our supporter of that series. The Institute for Leadership Studies also has educational programs around leadership development, learning how to be a better manager and leader, and how to innovate. We can support individuals' growth as well as businesses, and also do custom consulting. So be in touch with me and my associates if you're interested. I also just wanted to mention that we have, this program is podcast. It's live. Thank you, Stuart Horn, radio.dominican.edu.
And we'll have it posted within the next 24 hours. So, radio.dominican.edu. You got it.
Thank you, Stuart. And thank you again to all of our partners, and especially to Bank of Marin for making this possible. We hope you have a wonderful day. See you next time.